Star Wars, Heir to the Empire by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 3, side 2. Pelion brought his mind back to the business at hand. All ship defenses showed ready. The TIE fighters in their bays were manned and poised. "The Chimera is fully at your command, Admiral," he said. The formal question and response, a ghostly remembrance of the days when proper military protocol was the order of the day throughout the galaxy. "Excellent," Thrawn said. He swiveled in his chair to face the figure seated near the rear of the bridge. "Master Cabalth," he nodded, "are my other two task forces ready?" "They are," Cabalth said gravely. "They await merely my command." Pelion winced and threw another glance at Thrawn. But the Grand Admiral had apparently decided to let the comment pass. "Then command them," he told Cabalth, reaching up to stroke the Isalimir draped across the framework fastened to his chair. "Captain, begin the count." "Yes, sir." Pelion reached to his board, touched the timer switch. Scattered around them, the other ships would be locking onto that signal, all of them counting down together. The timer went to zero, and with a flare of starlines through the forward ports, the Chimera jumped. Ahead, the starlines faded into the mottling of hyperspace. "Speed 0.3, the helmsman in the crew pit below called out, confirming the readout on the displays. "Acknowledged," Pelion said, flexing his fingers once and settling his mind into combat mode as he watched the timer now counting up from zero. 70 seconds, 74, 75, 76. The star lines flared again through the mottled sky and shrank back into stars, and the Chimera had arrived. "All fighters, launch," Pelion called, throwing a quick look at the tactical holo floating over his display bank. They had come out of hyperspace exactly as planned, within easy striking range of the double planet of Befesh and its complicated system of moons. "Response," he called to the tactical officer. "Defending fighters launching from the third moon," the other reported. "Nothing larger visible as yet." "Get a location on that fighter base," Thrawn ordered, "and detail the inexorable to move in and destroy it."
"Yes, sir."
Pelion could see the fighters now, coming at them like a swarm of angry insects. Off on the Chimera's starboard flank, the star destroyer inexorable was moving toward their base, its TIE fighter wedge sweeping ahead of it to engage the defenders. "Change course to the farther of the twin planets," he ordered the helmsman. "TIE fighters to set up an advanced screen. The Judicator will take the other planet." He looked at Thrawn. "Any special orders, Admiral?" Thrawn was gazing at a mid-distance scan of the twin planets. "Stay with the program for now, Captain," he said. "Our preliminary data appear to have been adequate. You may choose targets at will. Remind your gunners once again that the plan is to hurt and frighten, not obliterate." "Relay that," Pelion nodded toward the communication station. "Have TIE fighters so reminded as well." Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Thrawn turn. "Master Cabalth," he said, "what's the status of the attacks in the other two systems?"
"They proceed."
Frowning, Pelion swiveled around. It had been Cabalth's voice, but so throaty and strained as to be nearly unrecognizable, as was indeed his appearance. For a long moment, Pelion stared at him, a cold feeling in the pit of his stomach. Cabalth sat with unnatural stiffness, his eyes closed, but visibly and rapidly moving behind the lids. His hands gripped the arms of his chair, and his lips were pressed so tightly together that the veins and cords in his neck stood out. "Are you all right, Master Cabalth?" he asked.
Save your concern, Captain, Thrawn told him coldly. He's doing what he enjoys most, controlling people.
Kabalth made a sound somewhere between a snort and a derisive chuckle. I told you once, Grand Admiral Thrawn, that this is not true power.
So you've said, Thrawn said, his tone neutral. Can you tell what sort of resistance they're facing?
Kabalth's frowning face frowned harder.
Not precisely, but neither force is in danger. That much I can feel in their minds.
Good. Then have the Nemesis break off from the rest of its group and report back to the rendezvous to await us.
Pelion frowned at the Grand Admiral.
Sir?
Thrawn turned to him, a warning gleam in his glowing eyes.
Attend to your duties, Captain, he said.
And with a sudden flash of insight, Pelion realized that this multi-edged attack on New Republic territory was more than simply part of the setup for the Sluice Van raid. It was, in addition, a test. A test of Cabal's abilities, yes, but also a test of his willingness to accept orders.
Yes, Admiral, Pelion murmured, and turned back to his displays.
The Chimera was in range now, and tiny sparks started to appear on the tactical holo as the ship's huge turbo-laser batteries began firing. Communications stations flared and went black. Planetside industrial targets flared, went dark, then flared again as secondary fires were ignited. A pair of old Carrick-class light cruisers swept in from starboard, the Chimera's TIE fighter screen breaking formation to engage them. Off in the distance, the Stormhawk's batteries were blazing against an orbiting defense platform, and even as Pelion watched, the station flared into vapor. The battle seemed to be going well. Remarkably well, in fact. An unpleasant feeling began to stir in the pit of Pelion's stomach as he checked his board's real-time status readout. Thus far, the Imperial forces had lost only 3 TIE fighters and sustained superficial damage to the Star Destroyers, compared to 8 of the enemy's line ships and 18 of its fighters gone. Granted, the Imperials vastly outgunned the defenders, but still. Slowly, reluctantly, Pelion reached to his board. A few weeks back, he'd made up a statistical composite of the Chimera's battle profiles for the past year. He called it up, superimposed it over the current analysis. There was no mistake. In every single category and subcategory of speed, coordination, efficiency, and accuracy, the Chimera and its crew were running no less than 40% more effective than usual. He turned to look at Cabal's strained face, an icy shiver running up his back. He'd never really bought into Thrawn's theory as to how and why the fleet had lost the Battle of Endor. Certainly, he'd never wanted to believe it. But now, suddenly, the issue was no longer open to argument. And with the bulk of his attention and power on the task of mentally communicating with 2 other task forces nearly 4 light years away, Kabalth still had enough left to do all this. Pelion had wondered, with a certain private contempt, just what had given the old man the right to add the word Master to his title. Now he knew. Getting another set of transmissions, the communications officer reported. A new group of mid-range planetary cruisers launching.
Have the Stormhawk move to intercept, Thrawn ordered.
Yes, sir. We've now also pinpointed the location of their distress transmissions, Admiral. Shaking away his musings, Pelion glanced across the holo. The newly flashing circle was on the farthest of the system's moons. Order Squadron 4 to move in and destroy it, he ordered.
Belay that, Thrawn said. We'll be long gone before any reinforcements can arrive. We might as well let the rebellion waste its resources rushing useless forces to the rescue. In fact, the Grand Admiral consulted his watch. I believe it's time for us to take our leave. Order fighters back to their ships. All ships to light speed as soon as their fighters are aboard. Pelion tapped keys at his station, giving the Chimera's status a quick pre-light speed check. Another bit of conventional military wisdom was that star destroyers should play the role of mobile siege stations in this kind of full planet engagement. That to employ them in hit-and-fade operations was both wasteful and potentially dangerous. But then, proponents of such theories had obviously never watched someone like Grand Admiral Thrawn in action. Order the other two forces to break off their attacks as well, Thrawn told Cabalth. I presume you are in close enough contact to do that. You question me too much, Grand Admiral Thrawn, Cabalth said, his voice even huskier than it had been earlier. Far too much. I question all that is not yet familiar to me, Thrawn countered, swiveling back around again. Call them back to the rendezvous point. As you command, the other hissed. Pelion glanced back at Cabalth. Testing the other's abilities under combat conditions was all good and proper, but there was such a thing as pushing too far. He must learn who's in command here, Thrawn said quietly, as if reading Pelion's thoughts. Yes, sir, Pelion nodded, forcing his voice to remain steady. Thrawn had proved time and again that he knew what he was doing. Still, Pelion couldn't help but wonder uneasily if the Grand Admiral recognized the extent of the power he'd awakened from its sleep on Wayland. Thrawn nodded. Good. Have there been any further leads on those mole miners I asked for? No, sir. A year ago, too, he would have found a strange unreality in conversing about less than urgent matters while in the middle of a combat situation. At least not in anything like the numbers you want. I think the Athiga system's still our best bet. Or it will be if we can find a way around the problems of the sunlight intensity there. The problems will be minimal, Thrawn said with easy confidence. If the jump is done with sufficient accuracy, the Judicator will be in direct sunlight for only a few minutes each way. Its hull can certainly handle that much. We'll simply need to take a few days first to shield the viewports and remove external sensors and communications equipment. Pelion nodded, swallowing his next question. There would, of course, be none of the difficulties that would normally arise from blinding and deafening a star destroyer in that way. Not as long as Cabalth was with them. Grand Admiral Thrawn. Thrawn turned around. Yes, Master Cabalth. Where are my Jedi, Grand Admiral Thrawn? You promised me that your tame Nogri would bring me my Jedi. Out of the corner of his eye, Pelion saw Rukh stir. Patience, Master Cabalth, Thrawn told him. Their preparations took time, but they are now complete. They await merely the proper time to act. That time had best be soon, Cabalth warned him. I grow tired of waiting. Thrawn threw a glance at Pelion, a quietly smoldering look in his glowing red eyes. As do we all, he said quietly. Far ahead of the freighter Wild Karda, one of the Imperial Star Destroyers, centered in the cockpit's forward viewport, gave a flicker of pseudo-motion and disappeared. They're leaving, Mara announced. What, already? Karda said from behind her, his voice frowning. Already, she confirmed, keying the helm display for tactical. One of the Star Destroyers just went to light speed. The others are breaking off and starting pre-light speed maneuvering. Interesting, Karda murmured, coming up to look out the viewport over her shoulder. A hit-and-fade attack, and with star destroyers yet. Not something you see every day. I heard about something like that happening over at the Draukai's system a couple of months back. The co-pilot, a bulky man named Lacton, offered. Same kind of hit and fade, except there was only one Star Destroyer on that one. At a guess, I'd say we're seeing Grand Admiral Thrawn's influence on Imperial strategy, Carda said, his tone thoughtful, with just a hint of concern mixed in. Strange, though. He seems to be taking an inordinate amount of risk for the potential benefits involved. I wonder what exactly he's up to. Whatever it is, it'll be something complicated, Mara told him, hearing the bitterness in her voice. Thrawn was never one to do things simply, even back in the old days, when the Empire was capable of style or subtlety, he stood out above the rest. You can't afford to be simple when your territory's shrinking the way the Empire's has been. Carda paused, and Mara could feel him gazing down at her. You seem to know something about the Grand Admiral. I know something about a lot of things, she countered evenly. That's why you're grooming me to be your lieutenant, remember? Touché, he said easily. There goes another one. Mara looked out the viewport in time to see a third Star Destroyer go to lightspeed. One more to go. Shouldn't we get moving? She asked Carda. That last one will be gone in a minute. Oh, we're scratching the delivery, he told her. I just thought it might be instructive to watch the battle, as long as we happen to be here at the right time. Mara frowned up at him. What do you mean, we're scratching the delivery? They're expecting us. Yes, they are, he nodded. Unfortunately, as of right now, the whole system is also expecting a small hornet's nest of New Republic ships. Hardly the sort of atmosphere one would like to fly into with a shipload of contraband materials. What makes you think they'll come? Mara demanded. They're not going to be in time to do anything. No, but that's not really the point of such a show, Carda said. The point is to score domestic political gains by bustling around, presenting a comforting display of force, and otherwise convincing the locals that something like this can never happen again. And promising to help clean up the wreckage, Lacton put in. That goes without saying, Carda agreed dryly. Regardless, it's not the situation we really want to fly into. We'll send a transmission from our next stop, telling them we'll try to make delivery again in a week. I still don't like it, Mara insisted. We promised them we'd do it. We promised. There was a short pause. It's standard procedure, Carda told her. A touch of curiosity almost hidden beneath the usual urbane smoothness of his voice. I'm sure they'd prefer late delivery to losing the entire shipment. With an effort, Mara forced the black haze of memory away. Promises. I suppose so, she conceded, blinking her attention back to the control board. While they'd been talking, the last Star Destroyer had apparently gone to lightspeed, leaving nothing behind but enraged and impotent defenders and mass destruction. A mess for the New Republic's politicians and military people to clean up. For a moment, she gazed out at the distant planets, wondering if Luke Skywalker might be among those the New Republic would send to help clean up that mess. Whenever you're ready, Mara. With an effort, she shook away the thought. Yes, sir, she said, reaching for the board. Not yet, she told herself silently. Not yet, but soon. Very, very soon. The remote swooped, hesitated, swooped again, hesitated again. Swooped once more, and fired. Leia, swinging her new lightsaber in an overlarge arc, was just a shade too slow. Ka, she grunted, taking a step backward. You're not giving the force enough control, Luke told her. You have to... Wait a minute. Reaching out with the force, he put the remote on pause. He remembered vividly that first practice session on the Falcon, when he'd had to concentrate on Ben Kenobi's instructions, while at the same time keeping a wary eye on the remote. Doing both together hadn't been easy. But perhaps that had been the whole idea. Perhaps a lesson learned under stress was learned better. He wished he knew. I'm giving it all the control I can, Leia said, rubbing her arm where the remote's stinger blast had caught her. I just don't have the proper techniques down yet. She impaled him with a look. Or else I just wasn't cut out for this sort of fighting. You can learn it, Luke said firmly. I learned it, and I never had any of that self-defense training you got when you were growing up on Alderaan. Maybe that's the problem, Leia said. Maybe all those old fighting reflexes are getting in my way. I suppose that's possible, Luke admitted, wishing he knew that too. In that case, the sooner you start unlearning them, the better. Now, ready? The door buzzed. It's Han, Leia said, stepping away from the remote and closing down her lightsaber. Come in, she called. Hi, Han said as he walked into the room, glancing in turn at Leia and Luke. He wasn't smiling. How's the lesson going? Not bad, Luke said. Don't ask, Leia countered, frowning at her husband. What's wrong? The Imperials, Han said sourly. They just pulled a 3-prong hit and fade on 3 systems in the sluice sector, someplace called Bafash and 2 unpronounceable ones. Luke whistled softly. 3 at once. Getting pretty cocky, aren't they? That seems par for them these days. Leia shook her head, the skin around her eyes tight with concentration. They're up to something, Han. I can feel it. Something big. Something dangerous. She waved her hands helplessly. But I can't for the life of me figure out what it could be. Yeah, Akbar's been saying the same thing, Han nodded. Problem is, he's got nothing to back it up. Except for the style and tactics, this is all pretty much the same rearguard harassment the Empire's been pulling for probably the last year and a half. I know, Leia gritted. But don't sell Akbar short. He's got good military instincts, no matter what certain other people say. Han cocked an eyebrow. Hey, sweetheart, I'm on your side, remember? She smiled wanly. Sorry. How bad was the damage? Han shrugged. Not nearly as bad as it could have been, especially considering that they hit each place with 4 star destroyers. But all 3 systems are pretty shook up. I can imagine, Leia sighed. Let me guess. Mon Mothma wants me to go out there and assure them that the New Republic really is able and willing to protect them. How'd you guess? Han growled. Chewie's getting the Falcon prepped now. You're not going alone, are you? Luke asked. After Bimisari? Oh, don't worry, Han said, throwing him a tight smile. We're not going to be sitting ducks this time. There's a 20-ship convoy going out to assess the damage, plus Wedge and Rogue Squadron. It'll be safe enough. That's what we said about Bimisari, too, Luke pointed out. I'd better come along. Han looked at Leia. Well, actually, you can't. Luke frowned at him. Why not? Because, Leia answered quietly, the Bafashi don't like Jedi. Han's lip twisted. The story is that some of their Jedi went bad during the Clone Wars and really mangled things before they were stopped. Or so Mon Mothma says. She's right, Leia nodded. We were still getting echoes of the whole fiasco in the Imperial Senate when I was serving there. It wasn't just Bafash, either. Some of those dark Jedi escaped and made trouble all through the Sluis sector. One of them even got as far as Dagobah before he was caught. Luke felt a jolt run through him. Dagobah. When was that? He asked as casually as possible. 35 years ago, Leia said. Her forehead creased slightly as she studied his face. Why? Luke shook his head. Yoda had never mentioned a dark Jedi ever being on Dagobah. No reason, he murmured. Come on, we can discuss history later, Han put in. The sooner we get going, the sooner we can get this over with. Right, Leia agreed, latching her lightsaber to her belt and heading for the door. I'll get my travel bag and give Winter some instructions. Meet you at the ship. Luke watched her leave, turned back to find Han eyeing him. I don't like it, he told the other. Don't worry, she'll be safe, Han assured him. Look, I know how protective you're feeling toward her these days, but she can't always have her big brother standing over her. Actually, we've never figured out which of us is older, Luke murmured. Whatever, Han waved the detail away. The best thing you can do for her right now is what you're already doing. You make her a Jedi, and she'll be able to handle anything the Imperials can throw at her. Luke's stomach tightened. I suppose so. As long as Chewie and me are with her, that is, Han amended, heading for the door. See you when we get back. Be careful, Luke called after him. Han turned, one of those hurt, innocent expressions on his face. Hey, he said, it's me. He left, and Luke was alone. For a few moments, he wandered around the room, fighting against the heavy weight of responsibility that seemed sometimes on the verge of smothering him. Risking his own life was one thing, but to have Leia's future in his hands was something else entirely. I'm not a teacher, he called aloud into the empty room. The only response was a flicker of movement from the still-paused remote. On sudden impulse, Luke kicked the device to life again, snatching his lightsaber from his belt as it moved to the attack. A dozen stinger blasts shot out in quick succession as the remote swooped like a crazed insect. Effortlessly, Luke blocked each in turn, swinging the lightsaber in a flashing arc that seemed to engulf him, a strange exultation flowing through mind and body. This was something he could fight, not distant and shadowy like his private fears, but something solid and tangible. The remote fired again and again, each shot ricocheting harmlessly from the lightsaber blade. With a sudden beep, the remote stopped. Luke stared at it in confusion, wondering what had happened, and abruptly realized he was breathing heavily and sweating. The remote had a 20-minute time limit built in, and he'd just come to the end of it. He closed down the lightsaber and returned it to his belt, feeling a little eerie about what had just happened. It wasn't the first time he'd lost track of time like that, but always before it had been during quiet meditation. The only times it had happened in anything like a combat situation were back on Dagobah, under Yoda's supervision. On Dagobah. Wiping the sweat out of his eyes with his sleeve, he walked over to the comm desk in the corner and punched up the spaceport. This is Skywalker, he identified himself. I'd like my X-Wing prepped for launch in 1 hour. Yes, sir, the young maintenance officer said briskly. We'll need you to send over your astromech unit first. Right, Luke nodded. He'd refused to let them wipe the X-Wing's computer every few months as per standard procedure. The inevitable result was that the computer had effectively molded itself around R2's unique personality, so much so that the relationship was almost up to true droid counterpart level. It made for excellent operational speed and efficiency. Unfortunately, it also meant that none of the maintenance computers could talk to the X-Wing anymore. I'll have him there in a few minutes. Yes, sir. Luke keyed off and straightened up, wondering vaguely why he was doing this. Surely Yoda's presence would no longer be there on Dagobah for him to talk to or ask questions of. But then, perhaps it would. Chapter 10. As you can see, Wedge said, his voice grimly conversational as he crunched through plastic and ceramic underfoot, the place is something of a mess. That's for sure, Leia agreed, feeling a little sick as she looked around at the flat-bottomed, rubble-strewn crater. A handful of other Republic representatives from her party were wandering around the area, too, holding quiet conversations with their Bifashi escorts and occasionally pausing to pick through the pieces of what had once been a major power plant. How many people died in the attack? She asked, not at all sure she wanted to hear the answer. In this system, a few hundred, Wedge told her, consulting a data pad. Not too bad, really. No. Involuntarily, Leia glanced up at the deep blue-green sky above them. Not bad, indeed, especially considering that there had been no fewer than 4 Star Destroyers raining destruction down on them. A lot of damage, though. Yeah, Wedge nodded, but not nearly as much as there could have been. I wonder why, Han muttered. So does everyone else, Wedge agreed. It's been the second most popular question around here these days. What's the first? Leia asked. Let me guess, Han put in before Wedge could answer. The first is, why did they bother pounding on Bafash in the first place? You got it, Wedge nodded again. It's not like they didn't have any better targets to choose from. You've got the Sluis Van shipyards about 30 light-years away, for starters. 100 ships there at any given time, not to mention the docking facilities themselves. Then there's the Prisitlan Communications Station at just under 60, and 4 or 5 major trade centers within 100. An extra day of travel each way tops at Star Destroyer cruising speeds. So why Bafash? Leia thought it over. It was a good question. Sluis Van itself is pretty heavily defended, she pointed out. Between our star cruisers and the Sluisi's own permanent battle stations, any Imperial leader with a gram of sense would think twice before tackling it. And those other systems are all a lot deeper into New Republic space than Bafash. Maybe they didn't want to push their luck that far. While they tested their new transmission system under combat conditions, Han suggested darkly. We don't know that they've got a new system, Wedge cautioned him. Coordinated simultaneous attacks have been done before. No, Han shook his head, looking around. No, they've got something new. Some kind of booster that lets them punch subspace transmissions through deflector shields and battle debris. I don't think it's a booster, Leia said, a shiver running up her back. Something was starting to tingle, way back at the edge of her mind. No one in any of the 3 systems picked up any transmissions. Han frowned down at her. You okay? He asked quietly. Yes, she murmured, shivering again. I was just remembering that when Darth Vader was having us tortured on Bespin, Luke knew it was happening from wherever he was at the time. And there were rumors that the Emperor and Vader could do that, too. Yeah, but they're both dead, Han reminded her. Luke said so. I know, she said. The tingling at the edge of her mind was getting stronger. But what if the Imperials have found another Dark Jedi? Wedge had gotten ahead of them, but now he turned back. You talking about Kabauth?
What?
Leia frowned.
Jorus Kabauth, Wedge said. I thought I heard you mention Jedi.
I did, Leia said.
Who's Jorus Kabauth?
He was one of the major Jedi Masters back in pre-Empire days, Wedge said. Supposed to have disappeared before the Clone Wars started. I heard a rumor a couple of days ago that he's surfaced again and set up shop on some minor world named Jomark.
Right, Han snorted. And he was just sitting around doing nothing during the rebellion?
Wedge shrugged.
I just report him, General. I don't make him up.
We can ask Luke, Leia said. Maybe he knows something. Are we ready to move on?
Sure, Wedge said. The airspeeders are over this way.
And in a sudden rush of sensation, the tingling in Leia's mind abruptly exploded into certain knowledge.
Han, Wedge, duck!
And at the rim of the crater, a handful of well-remembered gray-skinned aliens appeared.
Cover! Han shouted to the other Republic reps in the crater as the aliens opened up with blasters. Grabbing Leia's wrist, he dived for the limited protection of a huge but badly twisted plate of shielding metal that had somehow gotten itself dug halfway into the ground. Wedge was right behind him, slamming hard into Leia as he reached cover.
Sorry, he panted in apology, yanking out his blaster and turning to throw a cautious look around the edge of their shelter. One look was all he got before a blaster bolt spattered metal near his face and sent him jerking back.
I'm not sure, he said, but I think we've got trouble.
I think you're right, Han agreed grimly.
Leia turned to see him, blaster drawn, returning his comlink to his belt with his free hand.
They've learned. This time they're jamming our communications.
Leia felt cold all over. Way out here, without comlinks, they were as good as helpless. Totally cut off from any possibility of help. Her hand, reaching automatically for her stomach, brushed her new lightsaber instead. She pulled it free, a fresh determination pushing past the fear. Jedi or not, experienced or not, she wasn't going to give up without a fight.
Sounds like you've run into these guys before, Wedge said, reaching around the barrier to squeeze off a couple of blind shots in the general direction of their attackers.
We've met, Han grunted back, trying to get into position for a clear shot.
Haven't really figured out what they want, though.
Leia reached for her lightsaber's control stud, wondering if she had enough skill yet to block blaster fire, and paused. Over the noise of blasters and crackling metal, she could hear a new sound, a very familiar sound.
Han?
I hear it, Han said.
Way to go, Chewie.
What? Wedge asked.
That whine you hear is the Falcon, Han told him, leaning back to look over their shelter. Probably discovered they were jamming us and put two and two together. Here he comes.
With a screaming roar, the familiar shape of the Millennium Falcon swooped by overhead. It circled once, ignoring the ineffectual blast ricocheting from its underside, and dropped to a bumpy landing directly between them and their attackers. Peering cautiously around their barrier, Leia saw the ramp lower toward them.
Great, Han said, looking past her shoulder.
Okay, I'll go first and cover you from the bottom of the ramp. Leia, you're next. Wedge, you bring up the rear. Stay sharp, they may try to flank us.
Got it, Wedge nodded.
Ready when you are.
Okay.
Han got his feet under him.
Wait a minute, Leia said suddenly, gripping his arm. There's something wrong.
Right. We're getting shot at, Wedge put in.
I'm serious, Leia snapped. Something here is not right.
Like what? Han asked, frowning at her.
Come on, Leia. We can't sit here all day.
Leia gritted her teeth, trying to chase down the feeling tingling through her. It was still so nebulous. And then suddenly she had it.
It's Chewie, she told them. I can't feel his presence on the ship.
He's probably just too far away, Wedge said, a distinct note of impatience in his voice. Come on, he's going to get the ship shot out from under him if we don't get going.
Hang on a minute, Han growled, still frowning at Leia.
He's okay for now. All they're using is hand blasters. Anyway, if things get too hot, he can always use the...
He broke off, a strange look on his face.
A second later, Leia got it too.
The underside swivel blaster, she said. Why isn't he using it?
Good question, Han said grimly. He leaned out again, taking a hard look this time. And when he ducked back under cover, there was a sardonic half-grin on his face.
Simple answer. That's not the Falcon.
What? Wedge asked, his jaw dropping a couple of centimeters.
It's a fake, Han told him.
I can't believe it. These guys actually dug up another working YT-1300 freighter somewhere.
Wedge whistled softly.
Boy, they must really want you bad.
Yeah, I'm starting to get that impression myself, Han said. Got any good ideas?
Wedge glanced around the edge of the barrier.
I don't suppose running for it qualifies.
Not with them sitting out there at the edge of the crater waiting to pick us off, Leia told him.
Yeah, Han agreed. And as soon as they realize we're not going to just walk into their decoy, it'll probably get worse.
Is there any way we can at least disable that ship? Leia asked him. Keep it from taking off and attacking us from above?
There are lots of ways, he grunted. The problem is you have to be inside for most of them. The outside shielding isn't great, but it blocks hand blasters just fine.
Will it block a lightsaber?
He threw a suspicious frown at her.
You're not suggesting.
I don't think we've got any choice, she told him.
Do we?
I suppose not, he grimaced. All right, but I'll go.
Leia shook her head.
We'll all go, she said. We know they want at least one of us alive. Otherwise, they'd just have flown by overhead and blasted us. If we all go together, they won't be able to fire.
This book is continued on cassette number 4, side 1.